Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. And in a very big week for Brexit news, we're minded to encourage politicians to listen to the now immortal words of Matt Goss that everyone has to be on the same page. Otherwise, you don't get to turn the page because somebody gets left behind otherwise. And if somebody's lost a page of the story, well, it could be key to the ending or the whole entirety of the whole journey. Thank you, Matt. But for equally poetic insight on Brexit market developments, shortly you'll be hearing from our head of research, Guy Foster. But first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research, and today we are going to be discussing markets and Brexit. And I guess we have to extend an apology that we're talking about Brexit again. You may be bored of it, but of course it is a subject that does keep coming up and certainly not disappearing from the headlines. And so we must be aware of its impact on certainly on markets. And so offering us that opinion is Guy Foster, our head of research. And in a moment, we'll be talking about markets and Brexit, but we will round out the conversation with some sort of crystal ball gazing as to trying to determine where Brexit can and might go next. So, Guy, thanks for leaving your desk to come across to speak to me today. Let's begin with market at price action relative to Brexit news. If I look at markets have actually had not having a bad year, albeit only a few weeks, and yet I can't see that the Brexit news has improved at all.
No, I think that's really important to understand that when markets were weak at the end of last year, that may have coincided with the turmoil, the political turmoil around Brexit also worsening, but the two weren't connected. It was just a coincidence. What was driving markets at the time was a realization that actually US growth couldn't continue at the very strong level that it was it had been performing at, whilst at the same time growth in Europe and China, which had been pretty weak during 2018, wasn't showing the signs of bottoming and recovering that people were hoping for. So that's why markets were weak. And it just so happened that at the same time, the Prime Minister was finding out the hard way just how unpopular her Brexit, the deal she'd negotiated with the EU, was. And she'd had to delay this vote. And that's the vote that we ended up coming back this year and seeing earlier this week.
Okay, and so the factors, before we get returned to Brexit, that have driven markets higher this year?
Yeah, again, not Brexit related. And in the face of increasingly convoluted political situation in the UK, but also in the US with this long-running shutdown. So all of this political stuff, you know, in the past we've described how you need to kind of fade politics and kind of ignore politics when you're looking at markets, think much more about the economics. Right at the moment, it's not the biggest factor driving markets. In fact, markets have recovered because we have seen a more dovish turn from the Federal Reserve, the US Central Bank. So the anticipation of rising interest rates into slowing growth, which the market had been wrestling with at the end of 2018, that's been eased a bit. So now we are looking at interest rates that are probably more likely to be on pause, possibly falling. And there's been announcements of concerted efforts in China to try and embolden growth and pick, which would be very positive for growth outside the United States and indeed particularly in Europe.
So better news for growth from China and better news for policy. The markets do seem to like a central bank that isn't that is sort of in easing mode or certainly slowing.
That's right.
Slowing down on its aggressiveness on applying the brakes, if there isn't too many reverse metaphors in there. But okay, so growth and the policy looking better, but in the UK, Brexit seems to have deteriorated. I mean, let's think about Plan A of Theresa May. Is that, and of course in time we'll bring this back to the markets, but is Plan A sort of dead?
I mean, I'd be reluctant to even say that Plan A is dead, to be honest. I mean, it's obviously suffered a crushing defeat, and I don't think there's any way in which it could return without at least cosmetically appearing a bit different. But, I mean, the crucial thing is not so much how repellent it is. It's more that I think there have been indications that the preferable options will emerge for whether you are a Brexit-leaning MP or a Remain-leaning MP. There are more attractive options than this kind of slightly middle of the road, not quite pleasing anyone option that is the one that the Prime Minister put forward at the moment.
So the plan now is to find to engage more with Parliament, and what do you think the preferred option that might appear from those discussions? Or could it be the case that it's impossible to get a loud enough sort of coherent voice from Parliament on this?
Well, the most obvious concession that ought, in theory, to get the support of the House would be a permanent customs union as part of Theresa May's deal, because in a permanent customs union, you wouldn't need the backstop. And so that's one important feature. And a permanent customs union would also seem to meet the six criteria that Jeremy Corbyn set out at the Labour Party conference, which were to do with maintaining high standards of employee protection and maintaining lots of cooperation with the European Union, but for keeping all of the positive features of single market membership and customs union membership, which the deal kind of would do. I mean, it doesn't meet the customs union criteria, but if that were added in, then theoretically at least Labour would support that. I mean, I'm not saying that I think that that's necessarily what's going to happen, because it's something that Prime Minister would be extremely reluctant to countenance. But ultimately, I think it looks increasingly like she'll have... The reason she would not want to do it is because then the chances are she would end up passing a Brexit bill that is supported by more Labour votes than Conservative votes and is the one that was described by Jeremy Corbyn, despite the fact that he's the opposition and she's the Prime Minister. But ultimately, unfortunately, that is the kind of situation that she seems to be edging towards, because we know that there are 80 or so very firm Brexiteering Conservative MPs, which is a big chunk of their governing plurality, and she's never likely to be able to come up with something that gets them on the same page as other members of the Conservative Party, whereas Labour Party probably broadly can be got onto the same page, particularly with the Remain-leaning parts of her own party. And that's it. So it is a real challenge for her to get an agreement which doesn't look like it's been dictated to her by the opposition.
And based on those challenges, presumably there is a chance that, you know, she's not successful in striking that deal, that, I guess, based on the customs union or some other deal. And if she isn't successful in that endeavour, then legislation as it stands takes us towards no deal. So, you know, is there a, therefore, a very high probability that we enter or we leave the European Union without a deal at the end of March?
Well, I don't think there's a very high probability of that happening, but we can't say that there's no probability of happening because, as you've very succinctly put it, that is the default option. If nothing else happens, that's where we go. You know, ultimately, we either leave with no deal or we leave with a deal, or Article 50 gets suspended or, you know, delayed or revoked. So those are kind of your four options. No deal, deal, delay, revoked.
Should we look at, well, we've looked at the deal, the potential deal that you talked about, reaching out to the Labour Party. We've spoken to Brexiteers even on this very podcast, haven't we? I mean, recall what they told us about no deal. Are they primed for it?
Well, they would say that it's not as bad as it's often made to sound, but they also are extremely reluctant to embrace it. You know, it's something that they would still say we need to do everything we can to avoid. Now, I mean, it is necessary if you are hoping to get a better deal out of the EU to make it clear that you are prepared to suffer a no-deal Brexit. You know, that's your BATNA, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. And if you make it clear that you can't abide by a no-deal Brexit, then it means you're likely to get less concessions. So I think that's why Brexiteers will always at least give the impression that they're prepared to enjoy a no-deal Brexit. I'm sure a few of them really do believe that, but generally I think there's a very large majority of Parliament who want to avoid that happening.
So tricky to strike a deal, but certainly we would believe the majority is even keener to avoid no deal. So what are the other means then to avoid it? Sorry, I guess you've already mentioned extending Article 50, but what are the complications with that? I mean, that must cost Theresa May a lot of political capital. I mean, is there problems? Would Europe have problems with it?
So Europe, Brussels and government are both strongly rumoured to be almost resigned to the idea that the deadline may have to be extended. And there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of resistance to that. And there are limitations or complications about how far it can go because there are European parliamentary elections in May. And obviously the idea is that we wouldn't be part of those because we would have left. So you probably aren't talking about the possibility of a long extension, but an extension is certainly something which we believe is being actively considered.
Okay, so trying to add up all of these sort of probabilities and what has offers the most upside for UK assets, and I guess we sort of look at sterling as the most obvious candidate as a way to measure how successful Brexit is or isn't being. But do you think it's a very low probability of no deal? So yeah, we're still of the view then that disorderly Brexit is avoided and that there's upside in the pound and associated assets?
I mean, over the medium term, I definitely think there is. I mean, the pound has already started to react to what I think is seen as progress in a funny sort of way. So, and it was a lot of surprise at the fact that the pound effectively rallied as the Prime Minister's deal received its sort of crushing defeat. But ultimately, I think what the market wanted to see was that progress. They wanted to see it moving forwards, and being defeated may not sound like moving forwards, but I think the worst case scenario would have been if the vote had been pulled again like it was in December, because that's what means that is actually what the most fervent Brexiteers are quite keen on. The more you delay the vote, the closer you get to the no deal Brexit, which I know I've said that most of them don't want, but that those who do, who do want the cleanest break, the no deal Brexit, they want to see this process sort of drag on until you get to the 29th and there's not really any way to do anything else. Whereas what actually happened is that the vote got defeated, which means now the Prime Minister has to come back to the House on Monday and announce what she's going to do. And the belief is that, that motion that she passes, this is what the government's going to do next, will be amendable, and Parliament will be able to at least see whether it can get support round an amendment which directs the government to do something else, which might be avoid no deal Brexit, it might be pursue a Norway option, it might be pursue some other option, might be add a customs union. All of these things are possible, and if you can get a parliamentary majority for one of them, it doesn't bind the government's hands, but it does make it very difficult for them to then go ahead and go into a no deal Brexit, knowing that Parliament is specifically asking them to do something else.
So the other thing that's happened this week was the vote of confidence in the government following that sort of crushing defeat, and a marginal victory was enjoyed, if you can call it that, by the Prime Minister. Not a huge surprise, but what does that mean in terms of general election prospects? I mean, clearly we are not about to have an imminent one, but you know, for how long is it off the cards, or is it off the cards until 2020?
Well, I would say hold your horses on that. It's not about to be imminent.
2022
is the next scheduled general election. But, I mean, the fact that the Prime Minister has survived this confidence vote does not mean that there won't be further confidence votes. When she survived her parliamentary confidence vote, or the vote of no confidence in her as leader of the of the Conservative Party, the Conservative Party vote, that means that she can't be challenged again until next, till this December. But a vote of no confidence in the government can be tabled any time the opposition wants to. And I think it is quite clear that if they believe that their chances have improved, then the Labour Party, the leader of the opposition, will continue to table more and more votes. And this is critical to the avoidance of no deal, because I think the Prime Minister's red line is probably that she doesn't want no matter how these cross-party talks that she holds with other senior parliamentarians roll out, she will want to avoid giving ground on free movement of labour, which is what everybody assumes to be her particular sort of focus of interest in this. And yet the Labour Party probably do want some movement on that. So she may come back from these cross-party talks and say, well, we haven't managed to resolve anything, we haven't managed to change the deal in any way, well, you know, maybe we'll vote on this one again or something like that, in which case there may be another vote of no confidence tabled against her. And if it looks like we are just sleepwalking towards no deal, as we've described before, the default option, then you might find the Remain-leaning parts of her own party starting to rebel even against a vote of no confidence in the government. And that might seem crazy, because maybe it's putting themselves out of a job, but under the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, what would happen if she lost a vote of no confidence in the government is not that that the government would immediately collapse and a general election would be called. There would be a 2-week period, 14-day period, in which she would have the opportunity to regain the confidence of the House. And that would be the opportunity for the Dominic Greaves of this world to say, well, we'll come back on side if you take this no deal option off the table. And I think that's critical to understanding why it is unlikely that we end up with a no deal Brexit.
So this, go on.
Now, in terms of whether that means we're not going to have a general election, so that still sounds like we're not going to have a general election imminently.
Yeah.
But imminent has a variety of meanings, and I would say it probably, you know, the support of her own party and the DUP and their resistance to the Labour Party being in power means that the government probably isn't going to get forced into a general election. However, given where they are, given the difficulties of governing, I think it is likely that once some form of future arrangement has been agreed, we eventually reach the anniversary of the last Conservative Party vote of confidence in the leader of the party, the Prime Minister, and another vote of no confidence is probably going to be tabled in her at that stage, and this one probably will be lost, whatever you, depending upon your perspective, and then you get a new Conservative Party leader. And given that even now, even at this point, the Conservatives are still ahead of the Labour Party in the polls, I think a new and sort of emboldened leader of the Conservative Party is very likely to want to try and test the electorate and see if they can't get back into a position of a majority government that would give them obviously so much more scope to govern.
Seeing Gove's sort of character in his performance suggests he would be that sort of person who'd want a general election to show what he's made of. But it's too much speculation into the future here now.
I mean, I mean, we haven't got into who the candidates would be, but I think, you know, it's difficult to imagine them not feeling like they would be more, they'd be able to build their popularity from the current level.
So great drama at the moment, but undoubtedly making clients feel a little bit nervous. But coming back to the top of the meeting, well, firstly, we still think no deal, disorderly no deal Brexit is avoided. But actually, the most fundamental things that are driving the fundamentals that are driving markets at the moment are better growth, slightly better growth outlook, and certainly a better policy outlook.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Brexit does for markets is that it affects the value of the pound. But developments that we've had recently, counterintuitively, because they may seem to be edging us towards no deal Brexit, but the market is very adept at discounting the fact that it's actually edging us towards a deal or an extension or edging us away from no deal. Brexit can also affect the bond market. So bonds, the value of bonds goes down if Brexit looks good, and the value of bonds goes up if Brexit looks bad. So again, you know, that's quite a good hedge of the political chaos which exists within portfolios. And if sterling goes down, most shares, or the average share, has foreign revenues rather than UK revenues, so their value goes up. So again, like whether it's equities or whether it's bonds, whether it's your overseas equities, they've all got to some degree a sort of natural hedge of that kind of political chaos in them. I mean, when you look at it, there is no question that a no-deal Brexit would be bad for the economy to some extent. There's a big question about how bad it would be, but it would be in things like house prices, potentially employment. So all of the sort of non-portfolio aspects of your personal situation or of people's situations. And we've seen, I think, where you can see Brexit weighing on people's wealth is, say, we had the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors house price balance figures out today, and they were very weak. They continue to suggest, at the moment, on average, just stagnant house prices, but that's definitely in the context of falling house prices in some areas like London and modestly rising house prices in other parts of the country. And certainly the London figures, again, also particularly bad. So London and the South East house prices are one of the things that is bearing the brunt of this Brexit uncertainty.
Okay, so, well, thanks for that, Guy. Very neat summary on how portfolios can be influenced by the developments of Brexit, and some reassurance in there as a result. Okay, thanks very much for your contributions. Thank you very much to listening. And please let us have any feedback on Twitter referencing hashtag Bruin Podcast, or send us an email, leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud, whatever. Please do let us know what you think or any topics you want covered for the year ahead. But no doubt Brexit will still feature from time to time. But until next time, many thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you again next week.